This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show Series 4, Episode 48. You're making me cross. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, there's plenty in the news to talk about with a coaching angle. Think about all that sledging. But we also have a look at using the crease while spin bowling and fast bowlers, should you be jogging. All that and more coming up on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. It's time for the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. My name is David Hinchliffe. I'm the headmaster here at Pitch Vision Towers, but the master in charge of cricket and also director of cricket coaching at a real school, Millfield. It's Mark Garraway. Welcome to the show, Garraz, again.
Thank you very much. It's good to know that Millfield is a real school, so that's reassuring for everybody that's there, and everybody's looking forward to breaking up in a couple of days' time.
Well, real compared to the fake one which I just made up. The Burners, the naughty schoolboy, is not here though, so we've got no one to admonish for bad behaviour. Okay, so you're not feeling at your best today, Garrett. So let's see if we can power through this and work some magic through the cold that you're experiencing.
Oh, don't worry about that. There's people in worse places than me, mate. That's fine. Having a little cold, we can crack through anything. Get on with it. That's what we say, don't we?
That's what we say, exactly. Okay, and speaking of getting on with it, I wanted to talk this week about sledging. It's kind of in the news at the moment. It's one of the talking points around the Ashes series, and I think a lot has been said about it over the last few days. Some positive, some not so positive, but I wanted to take a coaching tack on it with you today. From the point of view of a coach, how much do you need to integrate in that ability to help people deal with sledging, do sledging, and is it something that is a coachable element of the game, or is it something that you just have to leave up to players?
Well, I think in terms of the sledging that goes on, I think it's really important that coaches don't choose to work with people on how to sledge. It is very much an individual thing, and people need to find their own line that they can cross or not cross. And it would be wrong of me to stand here and say that I've never done it, because obviously you do, because in the heat of battle sometimes that sort of thing would happen. But it's not something that I encourage. In fact, I decourage our guys, because my view on sledging, from the experience I've had going up the levels as a player and then in particular as a coach, is that a lot of the time when you start sledging somebody, it actually detracts from your own skill execution. Mm. And ultimately you want to be keeping your skills at a peak level. So I've had as many bad experiences as sledging somebody, and it actually motivating them more and distracting me more than the other way around. So it's something that I don't encourage. However, I do believe that as coaches, we need to prepare our players to be able to deal with that. And some of the most fun sessions and some of the most memorable sessions when players from years gone by that I've worked with have spoken about, from when we've coached them in the environments I've been in, have been some of the ones where we've incorporated distraction. And one part of that distraction has been sledging. And then from that, they've built up strategies that has allowed them to concentrate on their skills, you know, getting into their pre-delivery routine, being consistent with that, finding a way, like Joe Root did in the last test match, of just smiling back at Mitchell Johnson, or doing what Mike Atherton used to do, which was just stare down the bowler, knowing full well that the bowler had to turn around and go back to his mark at some point for the game to continue. So, yeah, they're good fun sessions to have.
Yeah, it is a bit of a broad term, isn't it, sledging? Because it can be interpreted in different ways. I mean, it can be anything from the very, very overly aggressive stuff that's been in the news recently, or it can be something as simple as a passing comment which doesn't sound like anything, or, as you said, not saying anything at all. It's a broad thing, isn't it? And it's hard to just blanket say no one should ever sledge ever in any circumstances, because it isn't as simple as that. But, yeah, I like your idea of working on being able to deal with it. But does it boil down to it being an individual thing of somebody being able to deal with it? Is it something you can coach someone? Can you give people strategies? Or is that something where you just put them in a situation like that and you let them work those strategies out for themselves?
Well, I mean, it is a case of that, but I think there are some strategies that you can use, and obviously breathing is something that we've talked about a lot for calming anxiety and getting yourself down into a performance state. And it's the same with this, you know, because if somebody's saying some things that aren't particularly nice, or if somebody's trying to get under your skin, often that makes you speed things up because you're trying to compete against it. Yet the best players are the ones that actually slow themselves down in those situations. And breathing is one technique, a centering technique, I suppose, that allows you to control your body, which ultimately then helps you to control your mind as well. So there's one. You know, having a pre-delivery routine. So it might be that, you know, while somebody's sledging you, you step out of your crease, and the box that is your crease, you only go back into when you are ready to face that next ball. And that's one of the great things about being a batter, I think, is that you sort of dictate when the next ball gets bowled. So use that to your advantage. You know, staring somebody down like an Afton is a coachable skill. It might not work for everybody, but it is a skill that we can talk about to players, and they can try out and see if it fits them. Joe Root's tactic of smiling is a strategy, and therefore, if you practice it enough and it fits with you, then you can develop it as a very highly tuned skill to deal with that particular situation. So there are lots of things, and I've mentioned about five different strategies there that people have used down the years. So it would be only right that we as coaches should run a session every now and again where people get a chance to try out those strategies and see which one works for them.
And you can sledge yourself as well, can't you? I mean, especially a batsman, you've got all these demons going on in your head about footwork and head position and that last ball that you played a miss and you're lucky to still be there, and you can get yourself into quite a tiz as well, can't you? If you can end up being your own worst enemy.
Yeah, if you actually sort of analyze the things that we sometimes say to ourselves in battle, or in, you know, when we're batting or when we're bowling and it's not going very well, it actually probably is self-sledging, you know, and think of a debilitating effect that has on your performance. So yeah, you can turn it around. I think that's a really good point you just made, actually, and say, right, bearing in mind that I'm sort of being exposed to this type of negative language, what strategies can I use that I'd use against an opponent that actually I can use for myself to get myself back into a position where I'm able to concentrate on the next ball and apply my skills accordingly? So I think that's a really good point, because self-sledging is as debilitating sometimes as sledging from an opponent.
I think one of the most disarming sledge, it wasn't not even a sledge really, but one of the most disarming comments that I heard when watching a test match once was Kevin Peterson when he was batting, and I can't even remember the situation, but somebody was probably saying something to him, and he just turned around and said, "You're making me cross," and it was completely disarming because cross is just the opposite of sledgy, really, isn't it? It was just completely disarming. It kind of made the whole thing trivial. So I enjoyed that one.
Yeah, you don't want to sledge KP too much, because it will get him into a place where the only thing that's going to get abused is the cricket ball.
He's going to Hulk out and start smashing it all over the place. Okay, let's wrap up this section with a yes, no round. Three questions where Gareth and I can only answer yes or no, but no matter how much more that we want to say. So, Gareth, if you're ready, I'll be in charge of the questions this week. First question: chukkers can be cured.
Yes.
Yes. Second question: left-arm spinners have a natural advantage over off-spinners.
No.
Yes. Third question: slow your pace to bowl more dots.
No.
No. It's interview time now on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and as usual, we're joined by somebody who gives us a fresh perspective on cricket, and there's no difference this week because I'm joined on the line via Skype by Chris Nash, who is probably best known for being vice captain at Sussex and doing some interesting things with some of the England development sides. But he's also a director at Pure Cricket Academy. Welcome to the show, Chris.
Thanks for having me, David.
So, Chris, it's not often we get a professional cricketer on the show. So, you're in the middle of your off season at the moment. What are you up to at the moment when it comes to your own personal training?
Well, I've just had 3 weeks out in Bangladesh playing in what's called the Dhaka Premier Division, which is the 50-over competition out there. So I returned from there last week, and at the moment hoping to have a couple of weeks at home before heading off to Auckland to play for the Auckland Aces in their domestic 2020. So kind of a couple of weeks off and then I'm straight back into it. So it's been quite a busy winter so far, and it promises to carry on that way.
Now, there'll be people who aspire to the kind of life that you lead, being a professional cricketer and seeing the world and playing cricket around the world. And I guess as part of that, you are involved with the Pure Cricket Academy. Can you tell me a little bit more about that grassroots development that you're doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's something that me and my brother have both started doing on level three, and we've always had a real interest in grassroots cricket. Obviously, we both played at our local club in Horsham, and we had some fantastic coaching, which gave us great opportunities to play cricket. So kind of through kind of my involvement in cricket, my brother's kind of re-involvement in cricket, together with the head of cricket at Hurstbury Point College down in Sussex, Nick Creed, and also one of the top coaches in the country, a level four coach, Phil Hudson. We kind of got together and devised plans to start this academy down, originally based at Hurstbury Point College, just over the downs from Brighton. And we're starting to do like half-term courses and holiday courses starting at Christmas, just with the aim of producing some really high-quality coaching for kids on half-term courses. And then, obviously, I think one of the big things we want to do is to make sure that the kids who don't get into kind of the county squads and the other development squads within the county still get access to high quality coaching and at good facilities. So it's to make sure that guys don't you know, once they drop out of the system, they're not dropping out of cricket, and they have the chance to go back in and kind of continue their aspirations to play cricket.
One of the most common questions that we get asked is, how do I become a professional cricketer? And I guess part of that is to be able to find ways to stand out when you're in an academy set up, when you're working with coaches. How do you impress the coaches? So if someone came to you and asked you that specific question, how do I stand out, how do I make myself look good to you as a coach, what advice would you give them?
I think, obviously, coming from a batting point of view, you know, that's kind of what I do and what I love. I think as a batter, I think generally if a young player goes into a net and they see a coach, they probably want to try and impress them too quickly. So you can end up trying to play all your best shots straight away, and ultimately, I think, you know, personally as a coach, I'm looking for guys with a good temperament, with a good basic technique which you can build on. So I'd say don't be too ambitious when you walk into a net. I know from experience as a youngster, you walk in there and you think, if I can play loads of good shots, the coach will be impressed, and you can end up not playing the ball and not keeping it simple. Which is what you want to try and do in the middle. So, yeah, I think to keep it really basic and make sure that you've got a good technique in these nets, and I think that will impress coaches enough. I think if you can show those real good basic strengths, a coach will be impressed, as opposed to trying to play every shot in the book and kind of make a big impression in the first six balls you face.
Yeah, it's one of the messages of the Pitch Vision Academy show as well, is to get really, really high class at the basics, and then and that really does stand out. Now, if people are in the Sussex area in the UK, then and they're interested in finding out more about Pure Cricket Academy, they can head to the website, which is purecricketacademy.co.uk. Thanks very much for coming onto the show, Chris, and good luck in your travels for the rest of the winter.
Cool. Thanks a lot.
Time now for the questions section, the mailbag. Every week, a couple of questions, and the best question of the week wins a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we've had, as usual, a couple of questions come in, and people desperate to seek out the answers. The first one this week is from Ryan, and he says, I hear a lot of people talking about the use of the crease with spin bowling. I'm interested in your thoughts on when to use the crease and how to use it. So it's something which is not often coached and not often used by spinners. But Gareth, where do you come from when it comes to using the crease?
Yeah, well, it's another angle which can, as a spinner, facilitate deception, isn't it? So that's the art of spin, I think. It's how you get the ball to bowl, how you get it to spin, how you get it to fly through the air, how you get it the curve and also where it's released from. So, you know, using the crease is really important. And I suppose I was informed mostly by being alongside Shane Warne when he was at Hampshire. And Warney would have very defined strategies about using different angles and using the crease. And one of them being, if he had a plan to go around the wicket to a right-handed batter, then he wouldn't just go, oh, I'm going to come around the wicket umpire and then bowl the next ball from there. He would have a plan which would start by bowling a ball from as close into the stumps from over the wicket as possible, and then over the next three or four balls to work his way out, so he ends up bowling the ball as wide on the crease from over the wicket as possible. And then his next ball, he would go, I'll bowl around the wicket now, please, umps. And he'd let that go from as far out on the edge of a return crease from around the wicket as possible. And what he's done is he's dragged the batter's field of vision and the starting point for the ball all the way across the over the wicket angles, and then to the furthest extreme on the around the wicket angles. And he used to feel that he could drag a batsman's head and posture around quite a lot, which gave him another advantage even then, before the ball had landed. And then obviously if you multiply that by his drift in the air, which he got excessive amounts of, and his ability to create a calamity off of the pitch, he was in a great position by using those angles to back up what he naturally had anyway. And it's something that I've always talked to bowlers about based on that experience of working with him.
It's something that requires quite a lot of work, though, doesn't it? I mean, I remember, I've talked about this on the show before, but I remember seeing a video with Jeremy Snape in it, who, of course, was an excellent spin bowler for Leicestershire before going on to be a psychologist. And he was showing how, with a young bowler, how when he told the bowler to bowl as wide on the crease as he possibly could, the bowler moved just a couple of inches, and it feels a lot wider than it actually is, unless you're used to how wide you can go on the crease. So it is something that you need to put in the practice, right?
Yeah, big time, and it's a really good point. And we find this, don't we, when we coach and we ask somebody to do something that's slightly different, and you know, it might be a change of about 3%, they'll do it probably about 1%, and the feeling that they get, the kinesthetics that they're feeling, is a completely alien skill. So Snape is absolutely right in what he found when he went through that. So we have to expose them to the option of bowling from different angles on the crease quite significantly. And a way that we can do that is to put things like intervention cones out, or put a crash mat in the way, which means that they can't go into their usual areas. So you're forcing them to find a solution in another area. And then over the course of time, once they've explored that solution, bowling from wide of a crease, then you take away the intervention and see if they have any flexibility about where they're letting go of the ball. So that's another good way of doing it. But intervention cones, which are, you know, literally a traffic cone with a pole in it, are fantastic for that type of drill, for getting people to explore different areas, because you can just block off an area in the crease that they normally go into and say, right, now bowl the ball to that right-hander.
Now, is that a skill that you would isolate? You would say, right, here's a session that we're going to have today where we're specifically working on using the crease, or is it something that you would integrate more into a normal session? You say, right, okay, for the next 10 minutes during this session, I'm going to put down this intervention pole, and you're going to have to work out a way of bowling wider on the crease.
I mean, ultimately, it has to be governed by the player themselves a little bit, because, you know, we can't just put a change onto somebody. The player's got to be ready to move there. So it might be that you've had a discussion in previous weeks and you've talked about some of the things that Dan Vittori or Shane Warne have done, and sort of drop the seed in there. And really you're waiting for that player to come back to you and say, yeah, that's something I'd like to explore. And then based on their response, you know whether you can make a session out of it and that's going to be an appropriate thing, or whether you just drop it in over the course of four or five sessions. And almost forcing them to say, right, for the next 3 minutes, you're only allowed to bowl balls from wide of a crease, either side of a wicket. It's so individual, but the player has to be ready for you to go there, and they have to be giving you indicators to say, yeah, now's the time where I'm going to do this, and actually I'm probably going to let the information come into me, as opposed to, right, today we're going to do a session which is about that. And actually the player's going, well, I don't want to do that. And you're going to waste your hour or however long you have with them. So drop the seeds in, let the player come back to you, let the player open up and say, yep, fine, let's go with this, and then you go with it.
Let's head to the next question. It's a link to an article, in fact, from our good old friend Bonga. We love Bonga because Bonga's always getting in touch with the show. He's always chatting away with us, and he's been hunting the internet, and he's come across an article on the Fox Sports Australia website, which is a fun website to explore. I mean, I'm looking at it now, and has such headlines as "Aussies compared to psychopath" and "Chris Gayle's bizarre dating tips." But that's not what we're talking about now. We're talking about fitness tips from Dale Steyn. And the article talks about how Ben Cutting, the Aussie bowler, has taken the advice of Dale Steyn and done some road running to improve his fitness. And that's the reason why he's upped his game and he's made it into the Australian test side in recent years. So, and Bonga really was just wanting to know a little bit more about the idea of road running, fitness and fast bowling, because it's a controversial topic these days, isn't it, Gareth?
It is a controversial topic, but there have been some incredible examples of people that have put road running or long distance running into their program, independently probably of most strength and conditioning coaches that will be supporting them, and had huge amounts of success with it. So one of my great friends, Jeff Lawson, Henry Lawson, who bowled brilliantly for Australia, swore by it, and he would run up to 10 kilometres three or four times a week alongside a guy called Michael Whitney, who was a left arm seamer for Australia. Those two would go out running constantly, and saw that as being one of the key points to their fitness regime, which prepared them for the rigors of fast bowling. Then you read about this article and Kevin Shine, who's now the ECB lead lead fast bowling coach. When he was playing, he would often say that when he was bowling at his best, he was doing most miles and had most miles in his legs. Now, conventional strength and conditioning has very much gone away from that idea, and it's all about strength and it's all about Olympic lifts and all of those sort of things. And the bottom line is, and I say it every week, that certain individuals find their own way of doing it, and probably a combination of the two a little bit is really, really good. Talking to Ian Brunchweiler a couple of weeks ago about what they're doing within the England Under 17 program, and they're beginning to incorporate more and more running into it now, not necessarily long distance running and not necessarily the distances that were related to in the article, but there's a bit of a move from strength and conditioning to incorporate running rather than just isolating things in the gym into their practices for fast bowlers. So you know, running is important. I've always questioned the lack of running. I had a strength and conditioning once coach who told me 2 days before an international one day international that none of the players should be running because they're not physically competent to run. And I said, well, I think it's going to be difficult enough to beat England, especially if we're playing against them and not allowed to run. So it's an important part of cricket. If you talk to the likes of Henry Lawson and many others, an absolutely essential part of their development programs, but it isn't something that I would go everybody needs to do it who's a fast bowler, because there'd be lots of strength and conditioning coaches that would come at me and say, well, that's completely ridiculous, you should be doing squats, lunges, push pulls, core and all of those things which should be making up your fitness program. But as I say, there's been some great examples, one of which is Young Cutting and Dale Steyn that have done it and incorporated it and done great things.
It's not one of those cut and dried things where you can turn around and say everybody in all circumstances should never do any running. You need to look at the case individually, and that's something that each individual bowler can do. There are some benefits to running distance, and there are some downsides to running distance. So you need to look at those, give it a try maybe yourself and see how it goes. I'm one of the people who leans towards the side of don't do it unless you've got a reason to do distance running. You know, maybe keep it down to sprints or shorter runs, but certainly don't avoid it as much as you can. And the reason why I say it, avoid it as much as you can unless you've got a specific reason to do it. Well, there's three reasons. The first one is that bowlers tend to have a big difference between their left side and their right side, because naturally, you know, if you're bowling, you're bowling with one arm, so there tends to be an imbalance in your body. And one of the important elements of strength and conditioning is to try and re-correct that balance to try and prevent injury. When you're doing running, when you're doing especially running over distance and over time, then there's no you're not helping that situation. You're not necessarily making it any worse, but you're certainly not making it any better. So if you have a limited amount of time to do strength and conditioning, if you're spending 20, 30 minutes doing running instead of trying to redress those imbalances, then you might find that you're more likely to get injured. And the second reason is that jogging reduces the mobility in the hips, and hip mobility is an important part of fast bowling as well. So you need to bear that in mind as well. And you need to, if you are doing jogging, you need to compensate for the reduction in mobility of the hips by lots of stretching, lots of mobility work. And as you said, Gareth, doing things in the gym like deadlifts and squats, which help with the mobility of the hips, even if you're not doing heavy weights. But the third thing, and this is the killer for me, is if you are doing long and slow distance, then you're not doing short and fast work. And if there's one thing a fast bowler wants to be, it's fast, not slow. So that would be the downsides of it for me. And that's why I would say to people, avoid it. But there are benefits as well. And I think one of the key ones is discipline. You need to understand your body as a fast bowler. You need to know how far you can push yourself mentally and physically, and doing distance running helps with that, you know, because, you know, if you're doing distance running, you're probably going to have sore knees one morning, and you might not feel like going out for a run. And it's, if you put the miles in, then you feel like you've done good and you feel like you've pushed through and you've understood where your limits are, and it's a good mental thing. And also it's good for clearing the mind. I know that if I'm feeling a little bit cluttered and I'm not quite sure where I am with things, one great thing that I can do is just go out for a walk for 20 minutes. And just going out and clearing the mind and not thinking about anything for a while is a great way of mentally resetting. So I think that running can do that for people as well. So there's upsides and there's downsides, but I think the bottom line is that if someone came to me and said, should I run, shouldn't I run, then I would lean towards saying, well, can you find those upsides in other areas? But if you really enjoy doing it and it's giving you a benefit, then, and you can compensate for the downsides, then go for it. But I do lean towards saying, don't run. I'm going to be honest about that.
that's absolutely fine. And you know, push pulls, core, squats, lunges, Olympic lifts are the staple diet of fast bowling in this modern day and age. That is, that is for sure. And down the time that we've had since, you know, we've recorded what people have done in their training regimes to reach peak performance from the mid-70s up to now, there have been some examples of people that have taken running into their, and long distance running into their programs, and still been successful. But it would be seen as a more unconventional route rather than the convention, that is for sure.
And there is a big psychological element to it. I mean, Gareth, you're a bit of a runner, aren't you? You can probably, I hate running. I absolutely hate it, but I've done it in the past. But you can tell me, it's good for clearing the mind, and it's a good test, and it's easy to see whether you're improving or not, because, you know, you can see your times going up or your distances going up. So
yeah, it's good. It's good for me motivationally, because I don't know, it just kickstarts me, and I know that I operate better when I've had a run. And this is a conversation myself and Ian Brunchweiler have a lot, because he thinks I'm bonkers for going out running. You know, he'll go and beast himself on a rowing machine for 6 minutes, and it does exactly the same for him. But that's where people are different. Yeah. So for me, you know, I can also do that, but I like getting out there and sticking my music on or an audio book on and just disappearing for an hour.
Yeah, getting lost into it. Yeah, and I think that's a common thing with runners. You know, it's kind of the zen of running, isn't it? You know, you can just kind of be in the moment, and in a world where we have a million distractions all the time, when you're running, you're just running.
Yeah.
It's you on the road and that's it. So, you know, I do get that, but I've never experienced that myself. And yeah, I would much rather go into the gym and go, right, how much weight can I pick off the floor today?
Yeah, absolutely.
But so everyone's different, yeah.
Everybody is different. There are some really good conventional ways, and there's loads of stuff out there. And, you know, the stuff that Steph Jones does, for example, on the Pitch Vision Academy would be more akin to the conventional ways of developing fast bowlers. But, you know, there have been some guys downtown that swear by it. And that article that we read is testament to that. So it's David's turn this week. Climb up on the soapbox to have a little rant and rave. He's got a minute. He's very precise. He's always on a minute, and here he is.
This week, I've been thinking about success, and more specifically, the success rate of some of the more weird and wonderful tactics that you might use when you're out in the field, or even if you're trying something unusual when you're batting. Think about the success rate of a bowler in hitting his lines and his length. It's probably a decent recreational bowler might do 50 or 60% of the time, and then the batsman on top of that may 40, 50, 60% of the time work out what the tactic is that you're using and be able to overcome it before he succumbs to it. So if you're trying an unusual tactic, maybe one that works one in 20 times, one in 30 times, one in 50 times, maybe give it a bit more of a chance before you put it away saying it's never going to work, especially if you think there isn't any reason for it not to work, apart from it just didn't work that time. You might find that the more risks you take, the better you're going to get. Okay, that's all we've got time for then on this week's show. It's been another cracker, even though we've been up early in the morning and Gareth has struggled through with illness. We've made it through all the way to the end, and there's been some golden advice, as always, Gareth. But before we go, we have our time-honoured tradition of picking the winner of this week's coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And we had a question from Ryan about using the crease, and a discussion point from Bonga about running. So which one of those did you prefer this week?
Well, this week I'm going to go for the craft of spin bowling, and use of angles is one element of that craft. So it's something that's not discussed enough. As I said, I gave my Shane Warne example, which I think is fairly strong, bearing in mind he was one of the best bowlers that ever bowled the ball. And it was good enough for him. So can we encourage our young players to start using the crease more to create a bit more deception? And I think the answer to that is yes.
Congratulations, Ryan. We have some spin bowling courses, so if you're a spinner yourself, you can choose the one that you like, and you get it completely for free. Now, Gareth, if someone was listening to the show and they thought to themselves, well, a free course sounds good, free advice sounds even better, I'm going to send in my question. What would they need to do that to send that question in to us?
Well, they could give us a call on 0203 239 7543, or they could drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
You can find us on Twitter as well, at PV Cricket Coach, and you can Facebook us, if that's even the word, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And you can subscribe to the show. If you want to listen every week, you want to get that advice from Gareth come illness or good health, then you can do so by heading over to iTunes and doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy. You'll find us in there. You click on the subscribe link. That's all you ever need to do. And if you want to subscribe in any other way, use any other podcatcher, go to pitchvision.com/academy, click on the podcast link, and you'll find the details for how to subscribe using the RSS feed. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.